Today is Friday, February 19th, and you're listening to International Edition on The Voice of America. I am Chinedu Ofo, broadcasting from Washington, D.C. Coming up, Democrats introduce sweeping immigration bill.
On Friday, U.S. officials will begin to process up to 25,000 migrants turned away under the Trump-era migrant protection protocols.
Also ahead, President Biden withdraws U.N. sanctions on Iran.
U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken met by video conference Thursday with his counterparts from Britain, France, and Germany.
Plus, NASA lands a rover on Mars. These stories and more are next. On Thursday, Democrats introduced a bill based on the Biden administration's immigration priorities that would provide a path to citizenship for 11 million undocumented immigrants. Meanwhile, officials will begin processing Central American asylum seekers who were turned back and forced to remain in Mexico under a controversial Trump-era policy that has been revoked. White House correspondent Patsy Widaskuwara has the story.
On Friday, U.S. officials will begin to process up to 25,000 migrants turned away under the Trump-era migrant protection protocols. Good news for asylum seekers at this shelter on the Texas border with Mexico.
Our miracle is about to come true. We are very happy about it.
On Thursday, Democratic lawmakers introduced a bill to add resources to handle the backlog of asylum seekers. The U.S. Citizenship Act will also increase caps for green card lotteries, change the word alien to non-citizen in U.S. laws, and provide a path to citizenship for 11 million undocumented immigrants. Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi.
So this is a values-based but also economically beneficial. And as I have always said, immigrants coming to our country, with newcomers coming with their hopes and dreams and aspirations, with their optimism and determination to make the future better for their families, well, those are American traits.
Aimed to counteract 4 years of Donald Trump's hardline border policies, the bill is unlikely to receive enough Republican support in the Senate. Laura Reese is Senior Research Fellow for Homeland Security at the Heritage Foundation.
It is a very radical bill in that it greatly opens the border to additional waves of illegal immigration. It makes the government a participant in illegal immigration. And then it also eliminates grounds for removal on the back end. So not only would more illegal aliens be coming into the U.S., we would not be deporting very many.
The bill reflects immigration priorities that President Joe Biden introduced hours after he was sworn in. But a lack of bipartisan support could force it to be broken up into individual pieces, including provisions for essential workers who work in industries critical during the pandemic, such as food supply and agriculture, and for Dreamers or people who came illegally as children. White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki acknowledged that Democrats may need to compromise, but signaled that Biden wants broad immigration reform legislation.
The president feels that all of these requirements that are in the bill, these components of the bill, are what makes it comprehensive. They all need to be addressed. That's why he proposed them together.
The administration says it is committed to humane immigration policies. But with Trump-era pandemic-related restrictions still in place, the majority of migrants at the border will still be turned away. Aaron Rechlin Melnick is policy counsel at the American Immigration Council.
What we need to do is take a look at the situation at the border for migrants and approach it from a science-related viewpoint and not from a political perspective designed to turn away migrants. We hope that the president will relax the restrictions at the border, which public health experts are said are not necessary, because it's important to resume asylum processing while people are desperate.
Earlier this month, Biden announced an increase in annual refugee admissions, which fell to a historic low under Trump.
Up to 125,000 persons for the first full fiscal year of the Biden-Harris administration.
Immigration reform is a key campaign promise for Biden, one that he is eager to pursue while Democrats hold the majority in Congress. Patsy Widaskuwara, VOA News.
The United States says it is ready to talk to Iran about the possibility of reviving a 2015 agreement intended to prevent Tehran from developing nuclear weapons. Former U.S. President Donald Trump abandoned the deal nearly 3 years ago. VOA's Penny Dixon has more.
U.S. President Joe Biden's initiative to engage with Iran and rejoin the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action marks a departure from the policy of his predecessor. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken met by video conference Thursday with his counterparts from Britain, France, and Germany, the so-called E3, who were gathered in Paris. Blinken says the president's position is that Tehran should take the first steps.
President Biden has been very clear in saying that if Iran comes back into full compliance with its obligations under the JCPOA, the United States would do the same thing. And then we would use that as a platform to build with our allies and partners what we call the longer and stronger agreement.
In response Friday, Iranian Foreign Minister Mohammad Javad Zarif tweeted that Washington should make the first move. U.S. unconditionally and effectively lift all sanctions imposed, reimposed, or relabeled by Trump, Zarif tweeted, adding, Iran will then immediately reverse all remedial measures. A U.S. official has indicated that the issue of who goes first will likely not be the obstacle preventing the restoration of the Iran nuclear deal. The official said a greater challenge may be defining what constitutes compliance. Biden administration officials have already made some conciliatory moves towards Iran, such as easing travel restrictions on Iranian UN diplomats who the Trump administration confined to a small section of New York City in 2019. Penny Dixon, VOA News.
Power has been restored to more homes and businesses in Texas, but the crisis is far from over, with many people still in need of safe drinking water. Fewer than 500,000 homes remained without electricity, although utility officials said limited rolling blackouts could still occur. The extreme weather was blamed for the deaths of at least 40 people as of Thursday, some while trying to keep warm during record freezing weather in America's central and southern states. Texas Governor Greg Abbott wants mandates that would require power plants to withstand extreme winter weather. Abbott has laid much of the blame on the state's grid operators and has called for investigations.
Everyone knows how challenging the past few days have been for our fellow Texans. I want everyone to know that all of us in the state of Texas believe it is completely unacceptable that you had to endure 1 minute of the challenge that you faced. All of us agree on the necessity of action, not just the action taken to restore your power, but to action to ensure that you never have to endure anything like this ever again. That's why, for one, with each passing hour, we will continue to ensure that your power will be restored and that your water challenges will be resolved. Now, we know because of the storm that will continue to sweep across parts of Texas tonight that we are not yet out of this, but we're closer to this challenge being behind us. We will not stop until normalcy is restored to your lives. Until that moment comes, though, I ask all Texans to continue your efforts to take the proper precautions that are needed to stay safe and to stay warm.
That's Texas Governor Greg Abbott. Britain is slapping sanctions on three of Myanmar's military leaders over a coup that ousted the country's elected government. The Foreign Office said Thursday that the UK was imposing travel bans and asset freezes on Defence Minister General Mia Tun Oo, Home Affairs Minister Lieutenant General So Toot, and Deputy Home Affairs Minister Lieutenant General Tang Liang for their roles in serious human rights violations during the coup. Meanwhile, state railway workers in Myanmar are continuing to strike despite a police rampage targeting them in a sign of the military junta's concern over growing civil disobedience by public workers protesting the coup. Also in Myanmar, a young woman protester who was shot in the head last week as police dispersed the crowd died on Friday, her brother said, the first death among opponents of the February 1st coup. Libby Hogan of Reuters reports.
A protester who was shot in the head last week in Myanmar's capital died on Friday. 20-year-old Nya Twet Twet Kang had been on life support since she was taken to hospital after she was hit by what doctors said was a live bullet at a protest. Her sister, Mia Thapo Nui, spoke to Reuters.
I want to encourage all the citizens to join the protests until we can get rid of this system. That's all I want to say.
She is the first person to be killed since Myanmar's army seized power on February 1st. Police moved in on different protests across the country Friday. Baton-wielding officers were seen running at anti-coup protesters in northern Kachin State in the city of Michina. Clashes have erupted there in the past 2 weeks, and police have fired rubber bullets and slingshots to disperse crowds. In Myanmar's largest city, Yangon, police barricaded its largest protest site. A witness said hundreds of people gathered at the barricades anyway, while a procession of several thousand gathered at another point, including LGBTQ protesters chanting and holding the Hunger Games-inspired three-finger salute of resistance. Meanwhile, Britain and Canada imposed sanctions on Myanmar's ruling generals, while Japan joined India, the US and Australia in calling for democracy to be restored quickly. Myanmar's government gave no immediate reaction to the new sanctions.
That's Libby Hogan of Reuters. NASA and the United States have successfully landed the Perseverance on Mars after the rover left the company of spacecraft from the UAE and China in orbit. VOA's Arash Arabasadi reports challenges for the new rover and potentially a treasure trove of discoveries await.
7 months after launching from Florida's Cape Canaveral, NASA's Perseverance rover completed a space journey of nearly 500 million kilometers to the surface of Mars. The mission ahead? To search the red planet for signs of ancient life. For now, NASA scientists like Lori Glaze are breathing a sigh of relief after the perilous landing.
It is definitely the most dangerous thing we have to do, and the most challenging thing is entering the Mars atmosphere. Mars atmosphere is very thin. It's about 1% of Earth's atmosphere, so it's just enough atmosphere that we get really hot coming in, but not enough atmosphere to slow us down, so very challenging.
NASA aimed to park its rover at the Jezero crater that scientists believe was once filled with water, an essential prerequisite for life as we know it. Perseverance is the biggest vehicle NASA has to rove on Mars. On board is the helicopter Ingenuity. Together, they will survey the Martian surface and collect samples that could answer an age-old question: did life ever exist beyond Earth? But that's not all, according to NASA's Thomas Serbuchen.
What's so exciting about this, it's not only the landing and the investigations, which is the search for extinct ancient life from a time where life arose on Earth. If everything goes exactly like we hope, late in the 20s, we're going to go pick up the samples this vehicle is collecting and bringing it back to Earth for the first round trip to the planet Mars.
Perseverance is scheduled to spend at least one Martian year or 2 Earth years exploring the landing site region of the ancient river delta in a lake that once filled the Jezero crater. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News.
Aspiring astronauts have been invited to apply for a job that's out of this world after the European Space Agency launched its latest recruitment drive. Adam Reed of Reuters reports.
The sky isn't the limit for aspiring astronauts after the European Space Agency announced its latest recruitment drive. For the first time in over a decade, the ESA is calling for applicants for its next generation of astronauts. It's strongly encouraging women to apply and is looking at how it might add people with disabilities to its roster to boost diversity among crews. Those interested have a 2-month window from late March to late May to apply. To be qualified, applicants should have a master's degree in the sciences or mathematics field. ESA Chief Jan Warner.
We have astronauts from the last selection, and they are still active astronauts, and I would like to see them again going into orbit, going into space. But at the same time, we need also new astronauts to secure a continuity.
The selection process will involve 6 stages that will test candidates' scientific and technical know-how, physical capabilities, and the ability to stay cool under pressure. British astronaut Tim Peake.
When you look at what we're doing in human spaceflight, it is quite remarkable. We are pushing the boundaries. We're asking more of our engineering, of our scientists, of our astronauts and everybody. And so to be part of this international team that can actually make a real difference is a huge privilege, a real privilege. And it was that really that motivated me to want to be part of this team, to push myself, you know, even further than I thought was possible.
The agency's last recruitment drive in 2008 drew 8,000 applicants, of which 10 reached the final selection. This time around, the ESA is looking to add up to 26 permanent and reserve astronauts.
That's Adam Reed of Reuters. NASA research scientist Bethany Elman says the Perseverance rover is different from other rovers before. It is, as it can take samples to be returned to Earth.
The reason that collecting samples is so important is because we can do some science analyses on Mars, but it pales in comparison to what we're able to do in Earth labs.
That's NASA research scientist Bethany Elman. This is the Voice of America. The UK Supreme Court has ruled that Uber drivers should be classified as, quote, workers, unquote, and not as self-employed. Friday's decision threatens the California company's business model and holds broader implications for the so-called gig economy. Africa has surpassed 100,000 confirmed deaths from COVID-19. The continent was praised for its early response to the pandemic, but now struggles with a dangerous resurgence, and medical oxygen often runs desperately short. Protests in Spain over the imprisonment of a rapper convicted of insulting the Spanish monarch and praising terrorist violence have turned into rioting for the third night in a row. Pablo Hasél this week began serving a 9-month prison sentence. Security forces in Somalia's capital have fired on hundreds of people protesting the delay of the country's election. At least one explosion was reported at an international airport, and armored personnel carriers are blocking major streets.
This is Science in a Minute.
Members of NASA's Mars 2020 mission, who had gathered in their control room at the Jet Propulsion Laboratory, breathed a sigh of relief on Thursday at 2055 Universal Time after hearing...
Touchdown confirmed. Perseverance safely on the surface of Mars, ready to begin seeking the sands of past life.
NASA's new Mars rover Perseverance completed its 7-month, 472 million kilometer journey to the Red Planet and touched down at its landing site near the Jezero Crater, which lies north of the Martian equator. According to the U.S. Space Agency, the rover contains a suite of state-of-the-art instruments that will look into the Red Planet's ancient history for not only clues of a habitable environment, but for indications of past microbial life. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
You are listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. I am Chinedu Ofor, broadcasting from Washington, D.C. Paul Rusesabagina, a humanitarian and activist who is depicted in the Oscar-nominated film Hotel Rwanda, appeared in court Wednesday accused of supporting rebel groups. His family and human rights groups say he was kidnapped by the Rwandan government, and they are demanding his immediate release. VOA's Salem Solomon has the story.
Paul Rusesabagina was one of 20 defendants appearing before a judge in a courtroom outside Kigali Wednesday. The man hailed as a hero for saving hundreds of lives during the 1994 Rwandan genocide is accused of sponsoring terrorism in the country for his support of an opposition party and rebel group. Family members and advocates claim he was effectively kidnapped in September when he boarded a private plane in Dubai and was flown against his will to the Rwandan capital.
I would like to insist on the fact that Rusesabagina is in Rwanda illegally. He did not come following an extradition. He didn't even come of his own free will. He found himself in Rwanda against his will.
During the proceedings at the Supreme Court in Kimarura, Rusesabagina insisted the court did not have jurisdiction because he is a Belgian citizen and was unlawfully abducted. Rwandan President Paul Kagame has defended the means used to arrest Rusesabagina.
There was no kidnap, there was no any wrongdoing in the process of his getting here. He got here on the basis of what he believed and wanted to do.
The trial has prompted outrage around the world. 37 U.S. senators and representatives signed a letter to Kagame calling for Rusesabagina's release on humanitarian grounds, as he is a cancer survivor. They expressed grave concerns about the extrajudicial way he was brought to the country. The U.S. State Department also said it is closely monitoring the situation and has engaged the Rwandan government at its highest levels.
We continue to underscore that the legal process adjudicating the charges against Mr. Rusesabagina must be fair, transparent, respect the rule of law, and be consistent with Rwanda's own international human rights obligations and commitments.
Two of Rusesabagina's daughters, as well as a team of lawyers and supporters, watched the proceedings online and spoke about it afterward. Brian Endless, who has worked with Rusesabagina's foundation, called it a show trial.
These are defendants who are on trial for their lives and possibly life imprisonment. Most importantly, there were no lawyers next to them to assist in their defense. Their lawyers were kept in the back of the room. And just the physical dynamics of that were kind of incredible to see.
Rusesabagina's daughter, who lives outside of the country, said she's been receiving harassing phone calls and text messages from someone claiming to be her father's guard in jail. He told her he wanted to help her father escape, a ploy she believes is intended to add charges to Rusesabagina or even give authorities an excuse to execute him.
But we just know that this is a method that they use, and it's very inhumane considering that the condition that our family is in and the worries we have for our father. We will get our father out of that prison legally, not through these methods.
Rusesabagina did not enter a plea during his court appearance on Wednesday. The judge is expected to rule on the question of whether the court has jurisdiction on February 26. Salem Solomon, VOA News, Washington.
Facebook is blocking Australian users from sharing or viewing Australian news accounts amid a dispute over a proposed law. Australia wants tech giants like Facebook and Google to pay for the content reposted from news outlets. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
A bombshell decision is how Facebook's move is being reported in Australia. The social media giant said it was banning Australians from sharing and reading news stories on its platform with a heavy heart. The government in Canberra, though, has said it won't back down. Ministers have said the Facebook ban highlighted the immense market power of these digital social giants. About 17 million Australians visit Facebook every month. The Media Bargaining Code legislation has already been passed by the lower house of the Australian Parliament and is expected to receive final approval by the upper chamber, the Senate, next week. It would make Australia the first country to force big tech firms to pay for news content. Communications Minister Paul Fletcher is scathing about Facebook's actions.
Facebook needs to think very carefully about what this means for its reputation and standing. They're effectively saying on our platform there will not be any information from organisations which employ paid journalists. They're effectively saying any information that is available on our site does not come from these reliable sources.
The progress of Australia's social media laws is reportedly being closely followed in other parts of the world, including Canada and the European Union. Facebook said the legislation fundamentally misunderstands the relationship between itself and publishers. Large technology companies, including Google, have argued that by using stories from other publishers, they generate more internet traffic and revenue for the websites run by traditional media outlets. They've complained that as their advertising revenues have collapsed, social media platforms have benefited from their quality journalism without paying for it. In contrast to Facebook, Google has this week signed multi-million dollar deals with three major Australian broadcasters and publishers. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
That's it for our show today. For more in-depth and breaking news 24 hours a day, please visit voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Nadia Taha, and our managing editor, Kate Pound-Dawson, I am Chinedu Ofor in Washington. Thank you so much for listening and have a great weekend.